I was successful. I worked in advertising and marketing, and I was also overstressed and overworked, and I just did not want to continue down that same path. And the thing that I always wanted in my life, my entire life, was to be a parent. So instead of doing more of the same, I wanted to make this trip our trip. I wanted full ownership from both of us. I wanted to be partnership. I wanted to be present. I wanted to partner with him.
Candid conversations that might just change how you look at the world. Let's bridge cultures, transcend borders, and build a global family of changemakers. Welcome to If By Chance.
Raising a human is one of the most challenging and satisfying endeavors we can undertake. Parenting takes on many forms, and in this episode, we talk about partnership parenting with Lainey, an advocate for alternative education and a pivotal figure of the world schooling movement.
I work with families, especially in the world schooling community. We're responsible for creating this massive community and really spearheading this as a movement for the past 10 years. A lot of times, families that decide to go into home education or decide to go into world schooling or decide to make a change have lived a conventional life dictated by the, you know, conventional culture. We have these ideas that we've just inherited, and a lot of times we don't question them. And a lot of times families are not connected. And the belief is, okay, well, if we start home educating, or if we start world schooling, or if we start unschooling, suddenly, instantly, magically, our family will be together. And those are the issues that generally breaks families up, that, you know, stops world schooling journeys because nobody's getting along. Nobody knows how to communicate. There is an imbalance of power. It's one person dragging another person, usually a parent dragging a kid to do what the parent has in mind without the connection or communication. People's needs aren't getting met. So my book and the work that I do in the world schooling community is to remind them that in addition to all the pragmatic planning and the educational structure and all of this other stuff, they've got to create a family culture with some scaffolding that makes sense to their family. That means understanding what their family values are, understanding how they're going to make decisions, understanding and creating a plan so that everybody's needs and ideas and, you know, thoughts are heard, seen, and understood. So we're always doing like workshops and things along those lines.
Before we get into that, can I get you to tell people what world schooling is? So many people would have heard of homeschooling, but people may not know what world schooling is.
Sure. Well, world schooling, and as somebody who really helped, like I said, to spearhead this movement and to create community around it, the definition that I give is probably the most inclusive, and there is a purpose for that, and I'll get to that. World schooling is, in essence, using the world as a, you know, massive place to learn. What that means is transforming the world around us, whether it be cultural immersion or experiential learning or travel or staying at home and creating opportunities for cultural immersion through hosting couch surfers, through watching foreign films, through exploring arts and theater and film and foreign, you know, cultures, or food through foreign cultures. Now, world schooling includes all different kinds of travel, a diversity in educational approaches. There are formal homeschoolers. There are people that go to traditional schools and world school as a supplement. There are long-term travelers like I was. Then there are also unschoolers that world school and use the world as a way to quote unquote strew. So if you know anything about unschooling, one of the paths of unschooling and strategies happens to be strewing, which means putting things in front of your young learner in order to spark interest and not having an agenda. Whether they pick it up, great. If they don't, you can't force it on them. So the world does that for people that are traveling. And for those of us that are traveling long term, curiosity then tends to be the thing that motivates and drives that kind of learning. So it's an inclusive definition that includes lots of different styles of learning. But the curiosity, the multi-age and social aspects and experiential aspects lead the world schooling definition.
A lot of questions that homeschoolers get are that their child is going to be missing out, or that they won't know the rules of the world. They won't know how to engage. And that when we take our children out of a formal school setting and we put them in a less formal environment and trust them to follow their interests and pursue their passions, that we're doing them a disservice.
Sure. I mean, there will be people who say that. I would say in response, a very logical, pragmatic response is it's actually the complete opposite of those suspicions. You are in the world, therefore you're interacting with the world, therefore you understand the rules of the world because you are in the world, versus a made up structure that is arbitrary. Think about how often in your life as an adult do you only deal with people the exact same age as you? That is so arbitrary. So from social engagement, I can answer that in the sense of our children are interacting with people from all different age groups, all different cultures. The diversity of interaction and understanding how to engage happens through the experience of doing it. What they're learning in schools from a social perspective is how to relate to their exact same age group. In terms of preparing children for the world, you don't have to prepare children for the world because they are in the world and there's no preparation needed. You need to have a safe environment in terms of your own family culture to be able to connect, unpack choices, understand consequences, and to be able to have conversations without judgment, to be able to say, that may not have been appropriate, the thing that you said to that older woman on the street. Maybe next time, try it this way and try and understand from a cultural perspective, the doñas, the señoras, the people of that generation are expecting younger people to address them in this way. Is it right? Maybe. Maybe not, but let's have a conversation about that. We are engaging in the world. So how do we engage in the world that actually serves everybody? And those are those real life conversations that are non-punitive, that are exploratory, that are, part of social learning. And again, the family structure, the family culture has to be a safe space that we can have those connected, sometimes uncomfortable conversations. If this stuff happens in the institution of a school, the parents aren't even a part of this conversation. The parents don't even know when these things arise. They're outsourcing their children's not only social learning, but also connection with the world at large.
And what about when it comes to social circles and communities? So I think for a lot of parents, when their children start to attend school, it's very much about them meeting friends and you know, building that friendship circle and hopefully maintaining it throughout their school years. But if you're world schooling and you're traveling, then you're not going to be able to do that.
Oh, well, that's not true. That just isn't true. You know, one of the great things about the world schooling community and also home educating community as a whole, they're the same concerns that I hear. You know, if you homeschool your kids, how are they going to meet anybody? There are events, there are classes, there are ways that people connect outside of an institutional school environment. This is not the only way that people make friends. I'll tell you that. In our world schooling community, there are hubs, there are retreats, there are conferences. How do I know this? Well, I've ran 10 conferences around the world, and people follow these conferences so their kids can meet up with other world schooling kids, and it normalizes world schooling, and those families meet each other up because their kids became friends. And, you know, they're in Bulgaria and they meet up here, or next they're going to Albania, and, they, you know, families start planning so that there are these social connections. And when they're not together, world schoolers learn to say so long, not goodbye, but until next time. And the great thing about the world that we're living in today, there's technology that keeps our kids connected. I'll tell you, my son, who is now 25, met his best friend because I was friends with another family who was traveling, and we met online, the family and I. And it turns out that this family had a son the exact same age as Miro, and I said, why don't we just introduce them to each other online? And we did, and they became friends, and they played games. Yeah, it just so happened they happened to be the same age. You know, again, they don't have to be, but they were in the same age range, and they were in the same sort of developmental stage, and they had the same types of interests. And they met online for about 5 years before they actually met in person. And today they're still best friends. Last year, Miro flew to the States and was the best man at this young man's wedding. And, you know, this is the way friendships start. Deep friendships start by sharing experiences. And many, many, many families are home educating in their own home countries, as well as home educating on the road. So our community alone has about, if I had to estimate, I'd say about 60,000 families home educating this way. And that's the diversity and the range of families and cultures and backgrounds and interests are so wonderful that by the engagement of diversity in this community, it's so rich. Their experience, their social experiences are not homogenized. Had they just lived in a singular, you know, location and not travel.
And so have you been living this lifestyle for about 10 years? Is that right?
Closer to 15.
And was there a catalyst? Was there something that happened, or was it a gradual transition?
Well, for us, you know, I was a single parent and I owned a business in Los Angeles, and we had something called the 2008 economy crash. It didn't happen around the world, but it did hit California quite hard. So I did close my business, and I remember asking my son if he wanted to go travel for a year. And he said, well, yeah, of course, let's go. He was 9, just turning 10. So we set out for what was to be a 1-year journey. We never came back. We traveled very nomadically for over 10 years. And then when the 2020 pandemic hit, we both happened to be here in Mexico. And so we just sort of hunkered down and stayed. And we created a base. He was turning 21 at the time. And now he's just about ready to turn 25. So we've been here as our base. We've been traveling as well, but now we both have a base and transition into a different way of living. We're not, you know, I'm not raising my child. He's, you know, 25 now. He's an adult. But we're still finding amazing ways to learn, to be playful, to, you know, be a part of our community and to still dig deep into the culture. We never went home. You know, we went home to visit, but we never went home to live. So I still consider ourselves lifelong world schoolers, lifelong learners, and, you know, all the same principles that we developed through our nonstop nomadic life are a big part of the life that we live now.
Can you tell me about some of those principles and if those principles really changed in terms of your relationship with your son to when he was 10 and younger?
Sure. Well, our first goal was to leave the United States and to live in partnership. One of the things that my son said to me quite often before I left, before we, you know, adapted this lifestyle was, "Mom, you're always working. You never spend any time with me." And recognizing that I really wasn't present in his life for almost those first 10 years, also, I wasn't present in my own life. I was busy. I was occupied. I was working. I was successful. I owned a boutique branding agency, worked in advertising and marketing. A lot of my focus, even when I was present, I was really in my mind doing something else. And I was also overstressed and overworked. And I just did not want to continue down that same path. And the thing that I always wanted in my life, my entire life, was to be a parent. I was blowing it for the first 10 years, really cut into my heart. So instead of doing more of the same, I wanted to make this trip our trip. I wanted full ownership from both of us. I wanted it to be partnership. I wanted to be present. It was going to be our trip. We both decided on our budget and our destination and our pace. We also decided that we were going to unpack our days daily at the end of the day. We were going to be transparent about everything, and we were going to live without rules. And how great was that? Instead of rules, we decided to live in accordance and in alignment to our core values. And those are the things that developed throughout time, but I always had my core values. He always had his core values. And together we co-created what our family's core values were. And because we didn't have rules, we didn't have to be anywhere at any time or do anything or you know, listen to anybody or be accountable to some structure outside of ourselves, we lived in alignment with the values. So a question came up or an opportunity, the question was, does this feel in alignment to our values? And that gave us the foundation or scaffolding to move through life with grace. And those things did transform as our values, you know, extended and expanded and grew and changed. And sometimes they really gave us pause for thought when we did actions or made decisions that were not in alignment. And it gave us the vocabulary to talk about what was happening. Also, we talked a lot about our internal worlds. I was really adamant that I did not want to transfer the generational trauma or wounds that I had. And I wanted to claim 100% responsibility for the self that I was bringing to the relationship. And so I worked on my triggers. I talked about my, you know, de-schooling process. He, by doing all of that, I modeled to him that it was okay to be open and honest. And the frank conversations that we had, especially through, you know, some of the tough moments of his adolescence where he felt isolated. He gave words to those feelings. We talked about the meanings that he was giving to those feelings. And we talked about the way that he was processing the world and you know, without judgment, gave honor to those things. We also made choices as partners do, you know, that would help support him through those moments. We also decided that we were going to live in partnership and learn in partnership. So one of the things that I never knew that I had a deep passion for was pre-Columbian history. Like, how cool is that? I fell in love with history and archaeology and anthropology. And, it brought me to all of these archaeological sites. And he agreed, even though it wasn't his passion, to go along with me to these places. I went to farms with him and learned to put my hands in dirt and plant things. Funny thing is, both of our passions, even though they weren't the other person's, have influenced our lives in big, big ways. Today, I've got a massive rooftop garden, and he dove deep into adjacent types of history, mythology, creation stories, lots and lots of different cultural myths and political science. Oh my God, don't talk to him about politics. He is so well read on this stuff. And it's because of the things that he was exposed to through my passion in learning about the Mayans, for example, or the Incans.
I want to take you back to when you spoke about actions that weren't aligned with your values, because to me, it sounds like for others on the outside that they might look at that as the stumbling blocks or when things went wrong or off the rails. But listening to you, it sounds like something that you've incorporated into the process and that it's just a natural part of defining these principles and this way of life. For you.
I'll tell you the stories and experiences from my childhood. I wasn't allowed to make mistakes. I wasn't seen. I felt invisible. I wasn't allowed to be lazy. You know, all of that kind of conditioning gave me a sense of who I needed to be in the world and what my self-worth was. And in my 20s and 30s, when I started to unpack those beliefs about myself, I knew those things were harmful. And I knew that I needed to reprogram those sorts of belief systems that came out of those experiences. And it never felt safe to me to fail or to make a mistake. And I always knew that if I ever had children, they could fail and make a mistake without the punitive response. They can fail and make a mistake and have somebody there that can help them unpack the natural consequences of what their choices were. That's what I always desired for myself, but I never got that. But I set out to become a person who provided that for my child.
I think for a lot of parents, when their child does something outside of what was agreed or outside of the rule set or the values that they thought they had agreed upon, the parent feels like a failure. They feel like they're responsible for the actions of their child. Do you have any advice about that?
Well, if the parent is feeling a sense of responsibility or feeling failure, that really is the parent's own triggers coming up. Because if we are parenting with an agenda or an expectation, then we're not allowing the person that we're parenting or partnering, in my case, right, to be themselves and to be on their path. Now, that sounds like perhaps I'm, you know, not a hands-on parent, and it's quite contrary to that. I'm not a permissive parent. I am a parent who is facilitating the moment through each, you know, decision and action. And let's face it, you know, we make mistakes as adults. We don't want to be punished by our partners, our boyfriends or girlfriends or husbands or wives. We want to be supported and held when we mess up. And punishment, to me, had no place in our partnership. It just didn't. There was a lot of reflection and a lot of conversation about choices. And when bad decisions were made, you know, we licked our wounds and moved on. You know, nobody punished one another, but it really did become a learning, you know, potential. And trust me, we didn't make the same mistakes again, but to have a partner with you alongside to help you process those consequences and what that meant really is more important than, oh, you messed up, I'm going to punish you. And there's that person, you know, in isolation processing what the consequences are. And I never wanted that. I wanted to be the person who partnered with them so that they could unpack it themselves.
So I'm wondering, how do you maintain the role as a parent who is accountable for your child, particularly when they're under 18, and still be a partner?
Okay, so a lot of people misconstrue the word partner, and I want to give you an example that will make a little bit more sense. When I worked in an ad agency, I was the creative lead on projects. I was partnered with a writer, and together we were a team. It didn't mean that, you know, the art person told the writer what to do, or the writer told the, you know, creative director or the designer what to do. It was a team, and we held different responsibilities because we had different talents, different interests, and different abilities. Okay. So I, you know, never told my writer what to do, but we worked together and we had a main purpose, and the purpose was the campaign. So take that example into a family. Yes, I'm the parent. So yes, I am the breadwinner. So I have a different accountability, responsibility, and role than my child does. But his role is to be a child and to learn and to be engaged in life. And I could support him with the talents, skills, and abilities that I have. And he can support the relationship, the main goal, which is to travel and to learn and to have a beautiful life, right? We're both doing it from our perspectives. So if I dictated to him what I thought he should be doing, he would not be living up to his potential in terms of being present as a whole person. So my job is to be able to create an instance where I can take care of the responsibilities that I have, like the writer or the artist, and he could take care of the responsibilities he has, and we come together for this main goal, which is to learn together and have a beautiful life.
Was there ever a time that you felt like giving up, like you'd made the wrong choice and you needed to go back and live your old life?
I never felt like I needed to give up, but there were some very, very uncomfortable, difficult moments in Miro's adolescence, 13, 14 or so, where he felt really isolated. He felt really, you know, going through a lot of emotional changes, as any adolescent does. I don't want to be trite and say, well, that's just the work of a teen. That's just normal. It was real. And it always is real with whatever journey you're on and whatever stage of life you're in. But in his mind, the idea became, I am isolated, which is the cause of these emotional challenges and beliefs, thoughts that I'm having. When the isolation was just one of the cues that gave us the knowledge that he was going through emotional changes. And we talked a lot about it. And, you know, he understood that if he was in a traditional life, in a traditional school, be the same, because the kids around him were like this or like that, and they weren't the same, you know, they weren't this similar in some ways. And the only thing that they had in common was, location.
Yeah, the situation.
So connecting with another person or a group of people may have been as difficult. It just would have looked different. And the 13, 14-year-old Miro was struggling, and it was difficult. And yes, we lived high in the Andes Mountains, and, you know, we were literally isolated. We had a beautiful city around us, but there weren't a lot of 13 and 14-year-olds that were going through the same thing that were his best friends until he met his friend online.
So a lot of parents might have seen that as a red flag and tried to make big changes so that Miro wouldn't have had to have gone through that emotional transition. What made you comfortable with the idea that it was okay for him to sit with that?
Well, we sat with it, and we also got into a stage where, okay, we can make any decision we want to about life, anything at all. Do you want to move back to California? No, he didn't. Do you want to maybe move to another state in the United States? No, he didn't. Do you want to move to another country? No, he didn't. What is it you do want? Well, I want, you know, unschoolers, homeschoolers, I want to be around them. Do you want to go back to the States? No. Well, what about if we bring them to us? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, we're living, we're enjoying life. You know, he really loved where we were. There was so much to do and so much to see, and he was learning, and it was really his place. He loved it. He didn't want to leave, but he just wanted friends, and he wanted not to feel so sad, right? And so we had this idea, why don't we bring, you know, unschoolers, homeschoolers to us to have these immersive learning experiences alongside you? He's like, can we do that? Like, we could do anything. So together, we started researching, and we launched a company together called Project World School. And that's been running we're starting our 11th year of teen retreats, where we've brought teens to dozens of places around the world. We've brought them to Africa, Asia, Europe, Central, South America for these immersive learning retreats. Together, we created the structure based on the type of learning that we were doing. It was immersive learning without curriculum. We hosted these, you know, month-long immersive, you know, temporary learning retreats. And I'll tell you what, the funk that he was feeling, he got out of that. And he also learned that he's kind of an introvert, that he needed a lot of time to recover after a full month of full-blown social engagement. And that was really an amazing learning about oneself as well. And it gave us a lot to explore and talk about. And for the first 3-4 years, he was a full-blown participant. We ran this business, we planned it together, but when the trips were happening, I hired another adult, and he was a kid that was doing the retreat with the other kids. And then something clicked. There was a teen on one of our trips who had really bad homesickness. And Miro stepped in at 16 and started to help her process this and got her out of her funk. And really took a hands-on role of really helping this young girl facilitate. He was the same age, but facilitating based on the the way that I facilitated him in his own, you know, ongoing depression about the feeling of isolation, he did the exact same thing with her. And after that trip was over, he said, you know what, Mom, I'm going to start co-facilitating with you. And from that point on, we started co-facilitating all the trips. And like I said, he's going to be 25. So he and I run the trips together. And, you know, all of them are based on the structure that we co-created, which is a lot of internal work. We do community building in the beginning, a lot of improv and a lot of team building. We've got, you know, our reflection circle every night, which came from our conversations in our early travels and so forth. And so our team retreats or Project World School is based from not only our own, you know, experiences, but the co-creation that you know, we do together. And it's lovely. I love working with my son. So a lot of what has changed, but it's still based on all of it.
For parents that aren't feeling quite that connection with their child, the little person in their lives, is there somewhere that they could start? Is there a simple practice that you might recommend for them to start on this journey?
So I ask every parent to recognize each moment they become triggered and stop and pause. And instead of reacting, using the pause as a way to really go inward, remove yourself from the situation, and then coming back and deciding how to respond. So reaction and response are two different things. Pausing in a heated moment is a wonderful way to not perpetuate more rupture in the connection. One of the things that I said to my son before we left was, look, my mother was really, really controlling. And all you have to do, if I ever become controlling, all you have to do is say, and this is a gift I'm giving to you, and use it only sparingly. Do not throw this as a weapon. But all you have to do is say, you are acting like grandma. And that he had used that 2-3 times. And that stopped me dead in my tracks, because that was the one thing I did not want to become. I did not want to perpetuate the same patterns that I was raised in. That was my why. That was a powerful why. And that propelled me into moments of pausing, reflection, using tools, coming back, repairing, and then processing and letting them know, yeah, that was really painful for me when you said that, because I recognized that I was on autopilot. That's not how I want to be with you. My commitment to you is to be present. And so that really allowed me to repair.
Now, dear listener, it's your turn. Have you got something to add to the conversation? Then get in touch via the links in the show notes. Whether you have questions, a message of support, or resources that you think might help, we'd love to hear from you. And if by chance you know someone with a story that will inspire others, be sure to let us know. Your contributions help turn inspiration into action, drive positive change, and make life just that little bit better. And if this conversation inspired you to expand your worldview, head to hellohuman.global to join the conversation.